about the U.S. hitting 200,000 deaths.
Anybody else?
For Outstanding Competition Program. For Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series.
For Outstanding Comedy Series.
The Emmy goes to...
It seems strange calling you Stan. You don't mind me calling you Stan?
No, I don't mind. Actually, I was wondering what to call you.
Hey Girls was a female impersonating show with beautiful dance numbers, lots of comedy, and fabulous over-the-top costumes.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. UK retreats from gender ID plan, queer Emmys go with the flow down the creek, and Stan Munro celebrates lay girls. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 26, 2020. A UK government plan to allow trans people to legally change their gender without some form of medical certification was scrapped this week. When Prime Minister Theresa May first announced the proposal in 2017, the intention was to streamline and demedicalize the process. The current Tory government's Minister for Women and Equalities, Liz Truss, is trumpeting the reduction of paperwork costs associated with declaring a legal change of gender. However, trans people are still required to get a medical diagnosis of gender dysphoria and show proof that they have lived in their preferred gender for up to 2 years. During a public consultation period, a strong strain of transphobia-fueled resistance to major changes in the 2004 Gender Recognition Act, some from women's rights groups. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling was one notable opponent. She and others used the same old trope that predatory men would take advantage of easier self-identification rules to gain access to gender-segregated public facilities. Nicola Williams of Fair Play for Women told Reuters that the government's position acknowledges a fair balance between trans people and women's rights. 2 in 3 recent survey respondents in the UK agreed that no medical intervention should be required. The British Medical Association supported the self-ID reforms. CEO Nancy Kelly of the leading British advocacy group Stonewall called it a shocking failure in leadership. Kelly said the UK government has missed a key opportunity to progress LGBT equality.
The Trump administration is using students of color as pawns in its continuing war on transgender people. His notoriously unschooled Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is demanding that school districts in Connecticut cut their ties with the organization that oversees the state's high school sports programs. The Interscholastic Athletic Conference allows transgender girls to compete as girls in high school sports. DeVos is threatening to withhold millions of dollars in federal desegregation funding unless the districts leave the conference. The U.S. Education Department's Office for Civil Rights claims that the conference's decade-old policy violates the rights of cisgender girls under federal laws guaranteeing equal opportunities in education. The department has given school districts in New Haven, Hartford, and Groton until October 1st to withdraw from the conference. New Haven Mayor Justin Ellicker calls it extortion, saying that the federal government is trying to force us to take a side against transgender individuals. But Education Department spokesperson Angela Morabito insisted that it's not extortion to require school districts to follow federal law. The three school districts are thus far resisting DeVos' demands. Connecticut Governor Ted Lamont was quite clear, telling federal authorities in his words to butt out. We are going to stand up and fight against discrimination. State Attorney General William Tong says he's working with school districts to help them keep their federal funding. He said, transgender girls are girls, and the Office of the Attorney General will continue to protect every woman and girl in this state against discrimination. The controversy has national implications. At least 15 other states allow trans girl athletes to compete in high school sports as girls. The funds DeVos is sitting on are supposed to support educational opportunities for Black and Latinx students.
Donald Trump's lesbian niece, Mary Trump, filed a lawsuit on September 24th accusing the president and other relatives of defrauding her out of millions of dollars. Contrary to her uncle's frequent claims, the family real estate empire was built by his father, Fred, who lavished millions of dollars on Donald. Mary claims that she was deceived into signing agreements that fleeced her of tens of millions of dollars or more. The lawsuit in New York State Court charges that fraud was not just the family business, it was a way of life. Mary's suit names the president, his recently deceased brother, and the sister who abruptly retired as a federal judge a few months ago. They are all accused of engaging in a complex scheme to siphon funds away from her interests, conceal their grift, and deceive her about the true value of what she had inherited. Mary Trump is a clinical psychologist whose explosive bestseller, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man, describes numerous Trump financial flimflams. Thus far, there's no response to Mary's latest shot across the bow from anyone else named Trump.
Both chambers of the U.S. Congress miraculously agreed to make history with unanimous passage of an LGBTQ-inclusive suicide prevention bill. It establishes the three-digit number 988 for the country's National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It specifically requires queer cultural competency training for all Lifeline counselors and streamlines the process of getting specialized care for LGBTQ youth and other high-risk populations. The Senate passed the measure in May, and the House completed the unanimous assent this week. The Trevor Project provides suicide prevention and crisis intervention services for queer youth. Its press release cheered passage of the National Suicide Hotline Designation Act as a historic victory that will undoubtedly save countless lives. It's not over until the orange guy signs, however, and there's been no affirmation from the White House as yet.
Conservative parents in Taiwan are outraged by a book about two princes who fall in love and get married. Translated from the original Dutch, King and King is on a list of books distributed by the government for 6- and 7-year-old students this month. It's part of an extracurricular program designed to encourage love for reading and not mandatory. Nevertheless, the leader of Taiwan's leading anti-queer group called the book brainwashing. Tseng Xianying of the Coalition for the Happiness of Our Next Generation told Reuters that it is confusing our children. Members of his group picketed outside the education ministry earlier this month, demanding that the book be withdrawn from school circulation. But the LGBTQ advocacy group Taiwan Tongji Hotline Association defended age-appropriate queer-inclusive books. They pointed to surveys showing at least 1 in 2 lesbian, gay, and bisexual people were aware of their sexual orientation in elementary school. The group said in a statement that, "We can't just ignore the existence of LGBT plus youth." Taiwan's education ministry affirmed via social media that King and King helps children to recognize and respect differences.
Meanwhile, kids aged 3 to 7 will be able to join superstar Lil Nas X and Panini the Pony on a joyous journey through the alphabet from sunup to sundown with a children's book by the Grammy-winning outperformer. A promotional blurb says that C is for Country will feature the Old Town Road singer's signature genre-blending style. It will be published by Random House on January 5th, 2021. Social media was alive with reaction to the announcement. One Lil Nas X Twitter fan wrote, "I don't have any kids, or intend to, for like 20 years, so I will be reading this to my dogs."
Finally, preparations are underway for the one and only U.S. vice presidential debate. Republican incumbent Mike Pence and Democratic challenger California Senator Kamala Harris will face off on October 7th in Salt Lake City, Utah. Just who might play the role of the current Veep as Harris preps for that debate? Someone who's a great debater themselves, maybe, with plenty of experience interacting with the former Indiana governor. A former mayor from that state, perhaps. Social media gloried in the irony of the arch anti-queer vice president portrayed by the country's first serious out presidential candidate. Bound to be a performance worthy of Oscar consideration, Kamala Harris's rival in the mock debate is being portrayed by none other than South Bend's favorite gay son, Pete Buttigieg.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending September 26, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
And now, This Week in Trump.
You know, in some states, thousands of people, nobody young, below the age of 18, like nobody. They have a strong immune system. Who knows? You look and you take your hat off to the young because they have a hell of an immune system. But it affects virtually nobody.
Why haven't you said anything about the U.S. hitting 200,000 deaths?
Go ahead. Anybody else?
I get on my knees.
In this election, will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly.
Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
I'm Nancy Pelosi.
He's trying to have the Constitution of the United States swallow Clorox.
I'm Bernie Sanders.
This is an election between Donald Trump and democracy. And democracy must win.
Vote louder, vote.
I'm Donald Trump, and I don't approve this message.
90% of our audiences when we're in Melbourne, and the same in Sydney, were heterosexual. The heterosexuals kept our show going.
Lay Golden Girls later in the program.
Television, television. Television, television.
The 72nd Annual Emmy Awards ceremony brought some notable trophies to LGBTQ-related television. Jimmy Kimmel hosted the September 20th COVID-compliant virtual gala. He got to give a repeat award to another always fabulous host, one who made Emmy history with the largest number of votes in his category.
For Outstanding Competition Program, the Emmy goes to RuPaul's Drag Race.
Show me what you got. Are you a winner?
Thank you so much. That's so very kind of you. Thank the Academy for this beautiful honor. We love making television. It is an honor to make television. And all the kids get to tell their stories on our show. And it's beautiful. And a special thank you to the viewer. And a special note to the viewer. Kiddo, I know how you feel right now. Just know that you are loved. And don't give up on love. Believe in love and the power of love, okay? Thank you so much. Thank you. I love it.
Rue is a queer recovering addict in love with a trans girl. And the youngster who plays her on an HBO teen angst show beat out several veteran actors.
For Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series, the Emmy goes to Zendaya, Euphoria.
I know this feels like a really weird time to be celebrating. But I just want to say that there is hope in the young people out there. I know that our TV show doesn't always feel like a great example of that, but there is hope in the young people. And I just want to say to all my peers out there doing the work in the streets, I see you, I admire you, I thank you. And thank you so, so much. This is, whoa, okay, thank you.
Thank you. An unlikely Toronto-based comedy series won many loyal fans during its six-season run. In one of Emmy's biggest sweeps, it won all four top acting honors, the Outstanding Writing and Directing Awards, and the evening's crowning glory.
For Outstanding Comedy Series, the Emmy goes to Schitt's Creek.
Our show, at its core, is about the transformational effects of love and acceptance, and that is something that we need more of now than we've ever needed before. And I just wanted to say, for any of you who have not registered to vote, please do so, and then go out and vote, because that is the only way that we are going to have some love and acceptance out there.
I also want to thank, once again, this young man who took our fish out of water story about the Rose family and transformed it into a celebration of inclusivity, a castigation of homophobia, and a declaration of the power of love. So thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Academy. Thank you.
Outstanding management is one of the criteria for the Television Academy's Governor's Award. Chris Rock and Oprah Winfrey presented it to someone who went from living out of his car to creating a supportive and inclusive multimedia empire.
He did it all by himself. He's both talented and crazy, financing his own films, racking up hit after hit. In the hood, they say, I got receipts, and Tyler had receipts.
He is a maverick, an innovator. He's my brother, and this year's Governor's Award recipient, Tyler Perry.
When I was about 19 years old, I left home, and my grandmother, she gave me a quilt that she had made. And this quilt was something that I didn't really care for. It had all these different colors and these different patches in it. And many years later, as I was walking past one of those fancy antique stores, I saw in the window a quilt that looked just like the one that she had given me. There was an attendant who walked up to me and said, "Let me tell you about this quilt. It was made by an African-American woman who was a former slave. And each patch in the quilt she had put in represented a part of her life. One part was from a dress that she was wearing when she found out that she was free. Another part was from her wedding dress when she jumped the broom." And as I was hearing this story, I became so embarrassed. Here I was, a person who prides myself on celebrating our heritage, our culture, and I didn't even recognize the value in my grandmother's quilt. Now, whether we know it or not, we are all sewing our own quilts with our thoughts, our behaviors, our experiences, and our memories. Like in my own quilt, one of my memories when I was about 10 years old, I remember my father standing at the door, and I was wondering why he stood there so long. He was frustrated and he walked away, and I asked my mother what was going on. She said he had worked all week and he was waiting for the man to come and pay him, and he never did. They needed the money at the time. And I tell you, she was so frustrated, she turned to me and she said, "Don't you ever stand by a door waiting for white folks to do nothing for you." In her quilt, she couldn't imagine me actually building my own door and holding that door open for thousands of people. She couldn't imagine me owning land that was once a Confederate Army base, where Confederate soldiers plotted and planned on how to keep blacks enslaved. And now, on that very land, black people, white people, gay, straight, lesbian, transgender, ex-cons, Latin, Asian, all of us come together working, all coming together to add patches to a quilt that is as diverse as it can be, diversity at its best. I stand here tonight to say thank you to all of the people who are celebrating and know the value of every patch and every story and every color that makes up this quilt that is our business, this quilt that is our lives, this quilt that is America.
Television, 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 television.
That was Tyler Perry television. Concluding our queer look at this week's Emmy Awards.
I'm Diddly Day, an actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
We are showing something which is
just about the most fabulous show you'd ever see in Australia,
ooh,
Lay Girls.
Oh.
Of course, Lay Girls, as we know, is a drag show. And these are all men.
But it's not a drag of a show.
Oh, no, it's a bright show.
Every man to his own.
Yeah. Star of Lay Girls, Stan Munro. Stan and I have known each other now for quite a number of years.
Really?
In the business.
Man and boy.
That was Dame Stan Munro appearing on Australian television in 1973. This Way Out's William Broom hunts for gold with the Lay Girls star on the group's 50th anniversary.
It seems strange calling you Stan. You don't mind me calling you Stan, do you?
No, I don't mind. Actually, I was wondering what to call you.
Stan Munro, welcome to This Way Out. How are you?
I'm fine, William. I'm absolutely on top of the world.
It's so good to speak to you. We're celebrating this year, 2020, 50 years of Lay Girls opening in Melbourne. Can you tell us briefly what Lay Girls was?
Lay Girls was a female impersonating show with very big Las Vegas-style presentations, beautiful dance numbers, lots of comedy, glamour, and fabulous over-the-top costumes.
Stan, in 1970, you joined Lay Girls in Melbourne as the compere. Previously, you'd worked with Lay Girls in Sydney. How did you get involved with Lay Girls in Melbourne?
Well, I just arrived from Hong Kong. I'd been working overseas in Hong Kong and Beirut and around the UK. And I arrived there and I went straight into rehearsals to be star and compere of the show.
And who ran Lay Girls at the time?
Lay Girls was run at the time by Sammy Louis, who also had Lay Girls in Sydney. So he was branching out, and I was to take charge of the compere and all the comedy.
Most of the girls, the performers at Lay Girls, were what we would call today transgender. You were one of the few men who would don a frock for a show. What was it like working with all these people who were trans, and you being one of the few men who were in drag?
I've never wanted to be trans. I've never wanted to change sex or have breasts. All the performers at Lay Girls in Melbourne had breasts, hormone enhanced, of course. I've never wanted to go down that track. I stayed strictly as a man. And also, I never used a female name. I was always called Stan Munro.
Now, your audiences, they weren't mostly gay, were they, or lesbian, or
oh,
bisexual?
Oh, no, no. I would say 90% of our audiences when we were in Melbourne, and the same in Sydney, were heterosexuals. And they would come along and see the show. The heterosexuals kept our show going. We never played to a gay audience. You would get the smattering of gay people that would come in to see the show, but our money and my money was made on the back of ordinary Australians.
Lay Girls was a restaurant as well, and a bar as well as a show.
It was a restaurant nightclub. Meals were being served and alcohol was being served.
The people you worked with, can you remember some of them? What were their names? What were they like?
Let me think. I remember so many of them. Some of them went on to have complete sex changes. Some of them only stopped with the show for 1 year, and then they went on to other things. But I stuck with it for the whole 8 years. But I do remember someone called Joe Streisand, who lip-synced to Barbara Streisand. He actually looked like Streisand. And there was Cinnamon Brown, who was a very talented hairdresser, plus performer, but he left Les Girls and opened a very successful hairdressing salon. Who else can I think of? Angelique. She now lives as a woman in Sydney. And there was Elka, who was Swedish. Now she now works at a big store in Melbourne. Yes, they all went on to their other lives. You see, none of them went on as I did, doing solo work. When after I left Les Girls, I traveled a lot around Australia doing my solo show, and that led to shows overseas. And of course, I did a lot of television as well after Les Girls closed down in Victoria, because that was my living. I earned my living doing stand-up comedy.
Stan, you would compare it Les Girls. What was it like working with the other performers?
I had my own life going on, you know. We didn't mix socially. We just met at work, and we rehearsed for a new show every 3 months, where the whole show would, different dance numbers and everything would be replaced with other ones. But we never mixed socially. I really didn't have anything in common with them.
Stan, what were the biggest challenges for you being the compare of Les Girls?
I did a lot of TV work and interviews, and the biggest challenge in the very early 70s was to convey the idea that I was heterosexual.
And why did you do that?
Well, I was told by the management that I wasn't to declare that I was gay. It was a no-no. Plus, we were a new entity in Melbourne. I had to convey the fact that I was just a straight guy doing a job.
How did you feel having to conceal your sexuality?
I hated it. Yes, I did, really. It was so ridiculous doing it, because there I was, you know, albeit not every female impersonator is gay. There's quite a few that are heterosexual. But I had to convey that aura of a straight man just doing it for a living, which was ridiculous, really. And I'm sure a lot of people saw through the disguise.
William Broome sees through more of Stan Munro's disguise.
Did you ever get stage fright when you performed in Melbourne? Did you get nervous?
No, I used to. I don't anymore. I just sort of grin and bear it and go straight onto the stage and at it.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Tanya Kane Perry, produced by Brian DeShazer and by William Broome. The Who and Jason Mraz performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from the late Christopher David Trentum, and donors James Kennedy and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on radio-wiz.com, Manila, the Philippines, WUML, Lowell, Massachusetts, KICI, Iowa City, Iowa, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and y'all stay tuned.